5-1, and we'll move it for possible inclusion in our bonding priorities as soon as we get a quorum here. So with that, Representative Paul, could you please introduce us to your wonderful subject of, what do we call that?
It's a water treatment plant.
Water treatment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. House 521 is a bonding proposal for a water treatment facility in the city of Burnsville. And I have with me a couple testifiers, Mitch Rasmussen with the city engineer with the city of Burnsville, and also Mr. David Edmonds from Edward Kramer and Son. And I'm going to leave it to them to explain the particulars. Thank you.
Would you please give your name for the record?
My name is Mitch Rasmussen. I'm the Director of Engineering and Infrastructure for the city of Burnsville.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll quickly go through this. What we are proposing is a surface water treatment plant to capture the surface water that's entering the quarry area of the EKS quarry. And I'll go through the PowerPoint that you have in front of you. The cities in the southwest metro area, south of the Minnesota River, are experiencing difficulties in meeting their potable water needs while shouldering the responsibility of protecting the endangered natural resources of statewide significance in the area. Those resources include the Savage Fen, which is close to the city of Savage, the Black Dog Fen, which is in the city of Burnsville, and the Boiling Spring Eagle Creek Trout Stream that's by the city of Savage. The next slide shows just a map that shows the area. The quarry is south of the Minnesota River, west of I-35, and north of Trunk Highway 13. The fens are, Savage Fen is obviously west of 35 in Savage, and the Black Dog Fen is east of 35 in Burnsville. The Savage and Black Dog Fens are there. They exist due to the upwelling of groundwater that contains calcium-rich materials that have come up through the limestone, and they exist on the need for the groundwater table to be at a level where the water can come up and feed these plant communities. The Boiling Spring feeds the Eagle Creek, which is a cold water trout stream. As well water withdrawal needs in the area increase, protecting these natural resources are becoming more and more difficult, and they have fallen on the backs of the city of Savage and the city of Burnsville. And what we need to do, or are asked to do, or required to do by the Department of Natural Resources, when we drill new wells, we have to show through our modeling that we have no negative impact on the groundwater. We cannot lower the groundwater table at all with our wells. What it has required us to do is come up with a pumping scheme for our wells, where we pump the wells the farthest away from the fence first, and then as our needs arise, we can gradually turn on our pumps that are closer and closer to the fen. What this does is it causes us to have wells and infrastructure down close to the fen areas that we're unable to pump, except for those times of the year when we are yet reaching our max need, which is in the summertime. The Edward Kramer and Sons Quarry currently pumps an average of 10 million gallons of water a day out of the quarry. The quarry is approximately 100 feet deep, and so we get groundwater infiltration into the quarry, and that water then is pumped out of the quarry and into the Minnesota River. The city of Burnsville, on a daily basis, utilizes about 7 to 8 million gallons of water a day. So the water that's being pumped out of the quarry right now exceeds what the whole city uses as potable water in a given day. The project partners, Edward Kramer and Sons, and the area municipalities have identified through modeling and testing that we feel we could capture on a regular basis 4 million gallons of that 10 million average. It fluctuates, it goes up, it comes down. We feel we can get an average of 4 million gallons a day that we could capture and treat. The water that we would capture, because it's groundwater and is subject to contaminants, it would have to be treated as surface water. And that's what has created a difficult situation for the city of Burnsville and the community partners. The cost to treat surface water is significantly higher than to treat well water. And so that's one of the reasons why we're here, is to try to get some assistance to meet the added cost of treatment as well as the cost that we're bearing to protect the fans in the area.
Okay, Kent, we have a quorum now, so I'd like to call this meeting officially to order. Thank you for your indulgence. Representative Wilkin, I think you want to officially move House File 521, is that correct?
Yep, that's correct, Mr. Chairman.
For possible inclusion of bonding priorities. Thank you very much. Please continue.
Chair?
Yeah, Representative Mahoney.
So, if I don't know, maybe there's someone else, but could you define what a fin is? Is that just a swamp that's called a different name, or?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative Mahoney. To get the exact definition, the DNR would be the right people to talk to. From my understanding, is it's a group of rare plants that only can exist on this calcium-rich water that comes up through the surface of the ground or up to the subsurface of the ground and feeds these plants. And when the groundwater lowers, then they lose their system of survival. And according to the regulations that we have to follow, they're very rare.
Just a follow-up?
Yes.
I see there's the two of them here. Is this a pretty rare occurrence in the state, or are there multiples of them? And, you know, is the Iron Range going to come down and claim they got a bunch of them?
Mr. Rasmussen, you got everything.
Chairman Gunther, Member Mahoney, I don't know how many there are in the state.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you just remind me what it is you said the water needs to be treated for when it comes up when you're dealing with the treatment part? I was trying to...
Chairman Gunther, Member Clark.
Yeah.
It would be considered surface water because it's coming out of the uppermost level of the aquifer. And so we would have to treat for various contaminants. We've done a lot of testing down there, and the water is very pure. It isn't contaminated with anything that is very significant, but we have to prepare, because it is surface water, for the possibility of contaminants that could enter it from any number of sources. And so the treatment train, is a lot more significant than what we have for our wells. We typically just filter the well water.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Clark.
Could you tell me what things you're worried about finding there?
Yes, sir.
Chairman Gunther, David Edmonds with Edward Kramer & Sons, for the record. Representative Clark, the surface water treatment process is specified by the Department of Health, mm-hmm. and as communities such as Minneapolis and St. Paul treat their surface water for potable water supply, they do things such as filtration, sedimentation, flocculation. Those are ways to get solids that are contained in surface waters that aren't contained in groundwater removed from that supply, so the water can then be further sanitized using chlorine, similar to what the city uses currently for groundwater. And then also surface waters, as Mitch indicated, can be under the influence of surrounding activities, any kind of fuel, petrocarbons, things of that nature. Surface water treatment plants generally have a component of granular activated carbon or something that would be there in the case that something like that would come along in the supply water. Again, in the water that we have in the quarry, we've tested it, we've run pilot studies. We have none of those contaminants present, but due to the fact that it's exposed to the surface, just like the Mississippi River, which is a source of supply for Minneapolis and St. Paul, we need to have equipment or infrastructure in place in the plant to deal with the possibility of any kind of, you know, fuels, oils, grease, pesticides, phosphorus, nitrates, all those things are things that have to be considered because the Department of Health sets those standards. So as we build the plant, as Mitch pointed out, there needs to be additional equipment to, you know, sanitize the water to assure that any type of contaminants are captured before it's distributed to the customers.
Mr. Chair.
Or Clark.
I'm strongly supportive of what you're talking about. I'm curious if you're testing for some of the things that we're learning now are becoming ubiquitous all over in our water, like atrazine, mercury, maybe the flame retardants, a few other things like that. Have you or are you testing for those?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, the SDH is an engineering firm that did the pilot studies, and we also had a second firm, EarthTech, do 5 sampling events, and they sample for the whole host of potential contaminants or constituents that need to be identified. I mean, cryptosporidium, all those things that are really concerns have to be identified if they're present. Radon, I can't think of the list. Mm-hmm. The studies are an inch thick for each one of the ones we've done. But the standards are set by the Department of Health, and we have to follow those standards.
And so, Mr. Chair, am I understanding that so far the water does not have any of these contaminants, or you don't know yet?
No, there's no contaminants. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. There's no contaminants present in the tests that we've done. There are landfills in the area. I mean, that's one factor that we have to consider. The water that we're going to treat is upgrading. It's coming into the system. The landfills are adjacent on either side. Mm. We operated the landfill at Burnsville since it was opened in the mid-60s until 1997. We have data that we've done as far as monitoring wells testing. We had to test at our quarry sump. That's where the collection point was, and had no significant events over that course of time. The potential is there. Again, that's why the standard says granular activated carbon and other features to ensure that water quality can be maintained in the treatment process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I would be interested in seeing your list at some point of what you have found, and if you would mind sharing that, I'd just be interested. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Wilkin.
Thank you, Chairman. When Representative Mahoney was mentioning whether Sturgis or somebody's going to come down and say they've got one, kind of reminded me of the Mayan Python and the Holy Grail, where they're knocking at the castle door and saying, we're looking for a grail, and the French guy inside said, we already got one.
We're talking about whether they're friends up there on the range.
You wait in, Mr. Chair. You were just waiting for me to get
it. It was just a second ago. You walked in right at the wrong time. But this project, actually the Fen used to be in my district before it landed with redistricting and Representative Powell's district, and the city of Burnsville has been trying for a long time to find a way to reduce pressure on the Fen at the request of the DNR. And they've got this great source of water that's being just dumped into the river. Probably wouldn't need to be treated like this but for state regulations with the Department of Health. And this source would really relieve pressure on the aquifer from all the communities around the area. So there's absolutely no downside and a lot of upside in all sorts of environmental ways. Water's pretty much being wasted, just being dumped into the river, which probably makes the river a little better. So the one source of real clean water, but it can be used for potable water, and support Representative Powell's bill very strongly.
It will. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, would this be able to be used in the future to possibly draw water out of the Mississippi if it was needed, or?
Mr. Esterson.
Thank you, Chair Gunther. Representative Nelson, what we intend to do is, by continuing the dewatering, it will enable the quarry to continue to be mined, and when the remaining aggregate is mined out of the quarry, then the plan is for the quarry to become a lake. And so what we would do is we'd shift from a daily pumping of the water for daily use and shift over and use the water, let the lake fill up and use the treatment plant as a peaking use to provide peaking water in the middle of the summer. We would be able to do that without impacting the fens, because as the water level in the lake rises, it recharges the groundwater, and then we can pump our wells and not have an effect on the fens. So to answer your question, in the future, we would use the water that's in the lake as our source, and we could, we've done our modeling, and we could pump for 25 days straight with this plant and only lower the water level in the lake a foot.
Bill Clark.
I'm confused about one thing now. So
we have to go out and visit this place, don't we?
I think so. I'm with you, Mr. Chairman. I'm with you. I'm trying to understand. So this is also going to promote the quarrying operation. That's a part of what you're trying to do to enable the quarry to the
Mr. Chairman Gunther, Representative Puck, yes, it will enable the quarry to continue to be mined. The aggregate, the dolomite that's in this quarry is a very high quality aggregate, and it provides aggregate to the entire metro area and areas south. And in order to keep mining, they have to continue to dewater the quarry. And
Mr. Chair, so my question is, are they participating in the cost, the mining company, whoever that is?
Chairman Gunther,
yes,
yes, they are participating. If you work a little farther through the slides, there is a slide that that proposes a participation level by each party involved.
Okay. I'll be quiet and listen to that.
Mr. Rasmussen, go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Chairman Gunther, thank you. I'll kind of quickly go through because a lot of the questions have touched on some of the rest of the information in here. So I just reference the sheets in front of you, and then I'll just try to summarize as we go through. The benefits of the project are to capture the surface water, number one, and protect the natural environment that's out there, number two. If we utilize this water source for four million gallons a day, that's 4 million gallons less water that we're pumping out of the Jordan Aquifer. And we have many, many city partners in the area that we're all interconnected. Our water systems are all interconnected. The city of Burnsville has interconnects with Savage, Lakeville, and now with Apple Valley, which we just completed this year. Apple Valley has interconnections with Egan and Rosemount. Lakeville has an interconnect with Farmington, and Savage has an interconnect with Shakopee and Prior Lake. So we have a very large area where we could move this water to, and representatives from Prior Lake have voiced their willingness to take all the water that we could produce. Savage is having some problems with their wells. They aren't producing as much. They certainly are at the table and would like as much water as we could produce also. And the city of Lakeville has well interference problems with some of the private wells, and they're interested in looking at the water if it's cost effective for them. The other benefit is it does provide an opportunity for Edward Kramer and Sons to continue to mine valuable aggregate. It's well known that it's getting more and more difficult to open new mines, and it seems to be a reasonable thing to at least exhaust the aggregate that are in existing mines that are in place. That's pretty much the extent of what I have. Mr. Edmonds has some information that he can talk about their operations if you're interested.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned that there's a variety of cities down around that particular area, Lakeville, Savage, I suspect Shakopee, and a variety of others are all going to, at some level, benefit from this particular project. I see Burnsville certainly has stepped up and done a wonderful job of bringing dollars to the table. Are these other cities doing the same, or are they waiting, kind of sitting in the woods to see how it goes, and then, by the way, we'd like to be included?
Chairman Gunther, Representative Mahoney. They are there ready and willing to participate financially. The level of financial participation that the cities are looking at is the capital cost equal to what it would cost us to drill wells? Because if we can get the capital cost or our participation of capital cost, the capital investment, equal to what we would put into drilling a new well, then the proposal becomes cost neutral for the city. We're willing to put in the amount of money that we would have to put in to drill wells and get the same amount of water. And our city partners, at least the adjacent ones, are willing to do that too.
So is that the $2 million that's listed in your PowerPoint presentation, or is the $2 million coming from Burnsville and no one else?
Chairman Gunther, Representative. The $2 million is the capital investment that it would be required to equal the 4 million gallons a day that we would be getting out of the quarry water. So that is the amount that the city partners are proposing, and it would be divided proportionately to the amount of water each individual city utilized. If one city, let's say the city of Savage, wanted the whole $4 million, then they would pay the full $2 million of capital investment. We, at this time, haven't developed a joint powers agreement to define exactly what the distribution will be, but we know that there's more than enough interest out there to cover, to utilize even more than the $4 million. If we could produce more than $4 million on a regular basis, we have partners who would be willing to take it.
Thank you.
Okay. I think if you could kind of wrap up with the importance of having this done. I know there's going to be a shortage. You're in a very fast-growing area population-wise, and need for water is increasing. This is water that we're pouring into the river. I think there is an urgency to get this done, and the way I read it, the reason that you're asking for money is because of these abnormal things that the state requires you to do with this water. And I think I summed up pretty much what you have to say, right?
Thank you, Chairman Gunther. I think you did a really good job of explaining why we're here.
Any other questions? I think we got about six other bills to go. I really appreciate your being here. It's a very important thing. Representative Powell, you have anything to wrap up?
No, Mr. Chairman, I just appreciate your time in the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Wilkins renews his motion to have House File 510 be rolled over and considered for inclusion in our capital investment priorities. Yeah. Representative, I think we got House File 163. Representative Bradley, I think...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I realize that we actually have this project in a package, and I think it's better to see the biosciences as a statewide package. Plus, I knew that Representative Mahoney would have a superior presentation, and we've even brought fans from Rochester to watch this presentation. No pressure intended, but, Mr. Chair, I think rather than hear that, we are included in House File 510, so I would... allow Representative Mahoney to continue and will not deal with the 163.
Representative Mahoney. sounds like Representative Bradley is willing to move your bill 510 for possible inclusion in bonding priorities. You proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee, and Representative Bradley. I know you, like I and all the other members from that are involved with the bioscience industry, have done a good job with this particular committee talking about it. This is a bill that I carried very similar to this bill last year, and the chair of our committee has been a co-signator with this bill. Every year we've brought it forward. I try to... To use the time of the committee judiciously, I have brought in people from Minneapolis, St. Paul, Rochester are all here ready to answer any questions that you may have, but I'm going to go over the bill and talk about it. And as I say, we've heard this bill before. We had it in the bonding recommendations last year at $45 million, and this year we've brought it down to $32 million, and hopefully everyone will be happy with that for the time being. My bill, House File 510, is a bill for $32 million in bonding to deed to be used for bio-industry infrastructure improvements. Now, the infrastructure improvements, whether they are in Minneapolis or Rochester or St. Paul, or, is a new thing to this bill, the rural areas or the greater Minnesota areas, and I'll go over that last, include roads, sewers, water, any public infrastructure improvement that allows the bioscience industry to expand in the state. The bioscience industry in the state, whether it is Rochester and the Minnesota University, the University of Minnesota Twin City campus and its collaboration at this present time, has any use for this money, that is certainly up to deed and they can apply just like they have had that opportunity in the past. But There are other cities in the state that have a tremendous amount of needs, and that is why I brought the $8 million for the outstate and rural areas. What most of us don't realize is that not only is it the three major cities, but you have initiatives in Worthington, in Austin, in St. Cloud, in Redwood Falls, in Owatonna, in Wilmer, and in Hutchinson. So this is not just a class, cities of the first class issue. This is an issue for the full state. And many of you saw the presentation by, I'm trying to think of the name of the Pennsylvania consultants that came in last year and did a full analysis of what the bioscience industry can do. But it is somewhere between 7 and 28,000 jobs, which is would be the combined employment of two or three of the major employers in the state. So this is a first step, and it will be only a first step. We will have to come back for a number of years to build this particular industry in the state. We all know the needs. We've all seen most of the presentation. I will stay with the questions I brought down in terms of trying to keep the time that this bill takes to present. I have the people from Rochester, St. Paul, Minneapolis, and some from outstate to stand for any questions, but it's an issue that I've been very involved with over the last 2 years, and I'll try to handle most of the questions on my own, unless we need to bring them up. I know they've traveled some, but
we appreciate your effort to consolidate all this. Any questions from the members? Representative Slaughter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Honey, is it my imagination, or did we see this map about 3 days ago? Except it was red, not purple, isn't it? I feel like I'm in a dream. I think we've seen this somewhere before. So how does this fit into that other project? And are they overlapping requests, duplicating, different?
Well, I can't say that my counterparts from Minneapolis were as gracious as my counterparts from Rochester. But yes, it is an overlap. This bill almost supersedes all the other bills that are coming forward. Minneapolis, I can't remember what that exact dollar figure was. St. Paul tried to put in one for $20 million. Rochester had talked about a lot more. And we all got together, particularly with the direction of the chair, to say, what can we really get without trying to have everybody's expectations built up and then dash down? So this is a reasonable first step. We'll probably be back next year for the next bonding bill and a couple more in the years to come. But this is a first step. This would supersede the request from Minneapolis, St. Paul, Rochester, and some of the rural members that had come forward to talk about it. Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions? Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just sort of like to add my support. I think, Mr. Chair, I've been delighted with this organization that we have in this committee, and always believe that the greatest welfare reform program in the world are great jobs. And the commercialization of the biosciences field, which I think anybody would say is sort of the emerging, if you will, sort of breakthrough, just like the computer chips were on the cusp of this. I know genomics has been mentioned, but this is not just about genomics. This is, I think, about the whole framework of all the biosciences that are there. And we have not necessarily Minnesota. We have kind of spot things. We've got a pretty big company that's been successful. But and by and large, an awful lot of what's gone on in terms of the research has gone even to other states. And here's an opportunity, I think, to keep this kind of commercialization in Minnesota, and I think it is one of those really great investments that I think will pay off in good jobs in Minnesota.
Mr. Mahoney. Thank you, Representative Bradley. Just so people do understand that this is not just biogenomics, in Worthington, it's veterinary science. In Austin, it's food products. In Olivia, it's seed plants. In Medelia, it's biofuels. In Rushford, it's nanotechnology. In Mankato, they're working on a research park. And there's a few others, but not to take up a whole lot of time. But it is a wide-ranging industry that, again, can provide many high-paying jobs. And the nice part about this particular industry is that the jobs range in the $40,000 to $60,000 range, and generally they have to provide benefits. So we love them in this state because we don't see them often at this building. Again, if there's any other questions, I'd love to answer them, but I do want to recognize the people from Minneapolis and St. Paul and Rochester and outstate. They did come here just in the event that there were questions that I was not able to handle, and I appreciate them being here.
I also do. I think this is one of the few examples we have in this committee to really look at. This is could be a very defining moment in fires producing jobs and job production is what this committee should be about. So, seeing no other questions, Representative Bradley will renew his motion to have this House File 510 rolled over for possible inclusion in our bonding priorities. Members, we will be prioritizing all the bills that we've heard very soon and sending that list to the Capital Investment Committee. So remember, write down all the things you want to write down because we're going to have to do that very soon.
And I'll probably visit with Lucy on this one anyhow.
Absolutely. We're going to.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Take the calm number one. Does he need to state his name for the record? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Would you please state your name for the record?
My name is Bob Gunther.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Surge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 595 for possible inclusion in the bonding bill.
Representative Surge moves House File 595 for possible consideration in our...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, 595 is a redevelopment bill. I think Representative Surge has a oral amendment to this bill, and I'd like to get that done so we can have the bill the way I want to have it.
Representative Surge.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that on page 4 of House File 595, on line 9, page 4, line 9, we delete $15 million and insert $20 million. Also on page 4, line 16, delete $15 million and insert $20 million.
Are there any questions regarding the Surtage Amendment? Representative Wilkin.
Why not 50?
Representative Surtage.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wilkins, I'm always agreeable to that, or adding a zero, it's up to you.
we'll just go with that.
Yeah, okay. Those pins from the iron. Yeah.
All those in favor of the Surtage Amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Members, we'll give you the short version unless you want the long version. The short version is that the redevelopment account has been around for a long time. The redevelopment account is one of the only ways that our core urban cities can have the blighted areas that they have within their boundaries to get more land for light industrial development and more land so they can increase their taxable land they have for property tax purposes. It's also one of the only ways that we can take care of blighted areas in rural Minnesota, such as the fires and stuff like that, so we can take and redevelop this property into something very usable by our communities. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I think that basically sums up what the redevelopment account is.
Any further questions for Representative Gunther? Hearing none, can Surtage still... Okay. Representative Surtage renews his motion for House File 595, possible inclusion or omnibus bonding bill.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you, Chairman Gunther.
Thank you. What else we got? Representative Surtage? Representative Ruth Pavia here.
Well, we had a lot of delays today. Nobody showed up for a quorum. We should make it. Are you?
You want us to be
While we're waiting, I'd like to remind everybody we're going to have our rankings done by Friday. So we're going to have to get, each caucus is going to have to get together and do your rankings. And Representative Mahoney and I will meet sometime today to discuss that, so he'll get to everyone. Representative Swedish, which bill we going to take up first?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to take up and move House File 359 for possible inclusion. And I have an author's oral amendment.
You will?
Okay, on line 6, replace 1.2 million with 1.7. Then on line 14, replace 1.2 million with 1.7.
Does everybody get that amendment?
Yeah.
Okay, all in favor of Representative Sudich's amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Amendment passed. Representative Sudich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members. Mr. Chair, House File 359 in a different number was before this committee last session, looked favorably upon and included in the House bonding bill last year, also included in the Senate proposal this year as well. What we have before us today is a very exciting opportunity in northeastern Minnesota and a real, I believe, pilot project that could be duplicated in many different regions of the state. At this time of declining population in many rural communities and budget pressures on the state and local level, communities have had to decide where to put their resources in public infrastructure and in cities and townships. There's been a coarse group of cities on the Iron Range that has looked at this issue in the municipalities and townships and decided to have an innovative partnership between local communities. If any of you grew up in rural towns, and I know we had one member on the committee from Virginia, you know how contentious it is sometimes to get certain communities to get along and play nice and share resources. You don't have to go too far to see the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, Virginia, Mountain Iron Buell, over where Mr. Gazelka is from, or anywhere. There's a lot of bad blood maybe from a basketball or football score in high school or dating men and women from different communities. And so those barriers have been long and strong in many of these communities. But at this time, I'm bringing forward to you a very exciting initiative called the Central Iron Range Initiative, CIRI, where the communities decided with these limited resources to really pool and share the strengths of local cities and townships, and then also bring in the private sector, local chambers of commerce and businesses to all sit at the table and have a vision really for where to bring these communities on the Iron Range in the next 20 years. I think it's a great initiative. We're going to talk about two major focuses of it. The first is an infrastructure, sanitary sewer district. Congressman John Blatnick from the Iron Range used to bemoan the fact sometimes that he'd bring home a lot of bacon to northern Minnesota and people wouldn't realize it, and he said the only way people realize it is if you built the sanitary sewer lines above ground. People then realize maybe what government does for them sometimes. So we're going to talk a bit about sanitary sewer issues. And on the other aspect, and I almost don't want to do this because I tried quoting the Bible in front of the townships yesterday and I got it wrong, so I'm going to try a different quote from Will Rogers this time. And Will Rogers said about investing, you know, to invest in land because we're not making, or God's not making any more of it. Well, we have an exciting opportunity to actually maybe make some more land for the state of Minnesota and some lakeshore land, and we're going to be discussing that in the project as well. So I'm going to cut it off there. That's a working. We may have brought a friend or two from the Orange area, but we're going to start with an Italian. I'm going to introduce John Fido from the Chisholm EDA.
Welcome to the committee. Give your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Fido, and I represent the Chisholm Economic Development Authority. I'm the director. I'm also a longtime member of the Central Iron Range Initiative that Representative Sertich spoke about. To give a little longer history of the Central Iron Range Initiative, I think Representative Sertich is very correct. It is extremely difficult to get folks to forget about where those borders are between communities and to think of themselves as neighbors in the context of no back fence. And the task of bringing that about on the Iron Range is no easier than it is anyplace else. The fact that there historically is a lot of competition, or was a lot of competition, I think is, again, as Representative Sertich says, self-evident. But about 7 years ago, a group of folks in those communities, Chisholm, Hibbing, Balkan Township, Kinney, Great Scott Township, and Buell, decided that we could do things together better than we could do things separately. A lot of the difficulties that we faced on the Iron Range and the cyclical types of economies that the mining industry has brought along with it revolve around the ability to not only diversify but to take advantage of those times when the economy is good and use our resources to make sure the next time that the economy goes the other direction relative to international marketplaces and the steel industry that we're able not only to weather that storm but to continue to do better and better. That means we are partners with each other, both in terms of the communities and the private sector, more specifically the mining companies. And I think that this relationship that occurred within the Central Iron Range Initiative program specifically focused on making the mining companies an active partner. And I think to the greatest degree, that is what has changed over the course of the last few years. We're not only sharing the opportunities to work together, we're also sharing plans. We put together a comprehensive plan between the communities. We also, for the first time in a long time, saw the mining company's plans of not only current activity but future activity. And the fact that the mining companies move hundreds and hundreds of thousands of tons of dirt in order to get to those 40 million tons of iron ore every year, and they have to put it someplace. The idea here is to take that action and kind of direct them to put that dirt into a specific place to make sure that we're not making these mountains of dirt that for 20 to 40 years after the fact we try to figure out what we should have done or how we can move those mountains. In this time of activity within the Central Iron Range Initiative, we've also had other partners. We've had, as Tony pointed out, the private sector, governmental entities, St. Louis County, we've had each of the communities, we've had the Iron Range Resources Rehabilitation Board, the Blandon Foundation. No one is able to write a whole check to do what needs to be done in this particular process, but everybody's contributed a little bit. The plan that we put together has indicated over and over again the need for infrastructure, and like most communities, you don't think about it till it doesn't work. Unfortunately, that's too late. In communities of 100 to 125 years old, as are the case in many of the communities on the Iron Range, that infrastructure began to age 25 years ago. The fact that, for an example, a company in Chisholm, Minnesota Twist Drill, which 2 years ago was being sold off by its parent corporation, Cincinnati Millicron, in Ohio, that plant was scheduled to be closed down, the equipment sold off to a company that was going to move it to China. A local resource group, private sector individuals, along with some public help, put a package together to bring that plant back into activity. That plant today now re-employs almost 50 people at $15 an hour plus benefits at an average. And in some cases, they have a profit-sharing plan at the end of the year that distributes anywhere from $1,500 to $2,500 worth of additional revenues to each employee. That's the type of company that we're looking to keep on the Iron Range and see to that fact that they continue to expand. But one of their problems is it costs them $100,000 to treat their effluent beyond what the city of Chisholm is able to do. they have to ship that effluent to Ohio. One of the other things that we continue to hear over and over again is that companies will locate on the Iron Range if we can furnish them the ability not just to provide water, which we've got plenty of, but the ability to treat their effluent. So one of the things that we worked on first was how can we collectively cure that issue. We've got an engineering analysis that was preliminarily done, and what we've tried to do is to work with Congressman Oberstar, because of his position on the House Public Works Committee, looking at the longer term of being able to construct the facilities. But this interim piece that we're missing is exactly what hopefully this appropriation, the bonding bill, will provide us, is that engineering analysis, that design, and that pre-construction activity. With that, we will not only be able to cure existing issues so that the Minnesota twist drills of the Iron Range can continue to operate up there, but future Minnesota twist drills will be able to be located there. There are two other individuals that I'd like to have present as well. And you'll hear from them different aspects of what the Central Iron Range Initiative is all about. What you also have in front of you is part of the charrette that was conducted by the communities and laid out some of the plans that we're looking forward to have implemented. Thank you for the opportunity to present.
And Mr. Chair, charrette's a fancy word for drawing. That's what I learned in charrette. No, we did some visioning of where the communities are going to look like if we move this land around, and that's what the charrette process did.
Good morning. My name is John Jemnick. I'm an engineer with the Central Iron Range Sanitary Sewer District. The sewer district is a legal entity formed a few years ago that consists of the City of Hibbing, City of Chisholm, Buell, City of Kinney, Great Scott Township, and Balkan Township. The sewer district's primary function is to look at wastewater issues within the area. Currently, there are four wastewater treatment plants within this area, which is about a 10-mile distance between the one end of the district to the other. And these four plants treat about 6 million gallons a day. This component of SERI, the sewer district, is for engineering, pre-design, and management structure for the sewer district. The sewer district is a regionalization concept of creating one treatment site in the future for treatment of the entire area, not only to address the wastewater issues, but to provide reserve capacity for economic development for the Central Iron Range. Right now, there's, like I mentioned, there's four wastewater plants in the area. The City of Chisholm has a $5 to $7 million project that they are on a compliance schedule with the MPCA to do that type of an improvement to some of their failing infrastructure in their community. The City of Hibbing has approximately a $3 million project that needs to be developed in the next 1 to 3 years for creating a mercury treatment facility for their effluent stream. And the cities of Buell and Kinney, which currently share one treatment plant, have a $2 million project that needs to be developed and constructed probably within the next 5 to 7 years. So between those four communities, there we've got $9 to $11 million worth of improvements to the wastewater. We're looking at, as part of the preliminary engineering work that's been done, to develop one centralized location at a cost of $15 to $17 million. The phase one of the project is currently underway, which is the continuing planning of the evaluating permitting issues and capacity issues of the existing plants. And that was funded with a $45,000 local commitment from the sewer district was able to generate. Three specific issues, wastewater issues for this planning area, is one, to ensure reserve capacities for economic development. As businesses expand and new growth develops in the area, they need to have the reserve capacity to support their developments. Another issue is the mercury treatability. This planning area is within the Lake Superior drainage basin, so the standards for treatment within the Lake Superior basin are very stringent, some of the stringent in the state. And currently the city of Hibbing, which will be consistent with the rest of the project, has a 1.8 nanogram per liter mercury limit, which is a very stringent treatment process. So, like I mentioned, the overall project's approximately $15 to $17 million, and as the project proceeds, there's part of the management structure will include organization plan and operation and maintenance plan and those type of things. And from the economy of scales, this plan of having one treatment facility as opposed to continuing to operate, maintain, and replace the four existing facilities is going to be a benefit for the entire planning area. And that's about all I had this morning.
Thank you. So you see the short term, Mr. Chair and members, of getting this infrastructure in place, and now we're going to move along to a longer term vision, as this organization has done, on actually developing some new lakeshore in northeastern Minnesota. When these mining companies dig holes, some people look at it and they see holes, and Doug Hilderman looks at it, he sees lakeshore. And I'll let Doug explain this next part of the process.
Good morning. My name is Doug Hilderman. I'm currently chair of the Central Iron Range Initiative. Can I speak without the microphone up here?
Sure.
Some maps, if that would be all right.
Well, I think the microphone's for the tape purposes. That's why we have to have it. So we'll make it somehow.
This is really a long-term vision with a long-term outcome. We put this map together about 4 years ago, actually, in 2001, and we had several key elements on this map that are actually starting to come to fruition. We had a green area here on the pit lakes. We thought that we ought to be able to develop some of those. The yellow line on here represents the sanitary sewer district, which we now have the authority by you people authorizing us to establish the district and things. The motorplex is moving forward. We actually have people looking at power production on the Iron Range. I'll talk a little bit this morning about some pump storage capabilities and some green energy things, but really kind of started back here. I'm going to talk first with this map over here. Again, you know, if everybody can kind of see that. Tony, there's a board. There's a small 11 by 17 of each of these down there. Let me pass those around and people can kind of get a close look. They're the same. They're duplicates of these. But, you know, we talk about not creating lakes anymore. We actually are in the Central Iron Range. And we look at mining as a destructive process. What I'm trying to do is to get people to look at it as a constructive process. And kind of just in broad brush here, this little community on the end is Key West. Kipping sits here, 169 Little Block. This is Chisholm View and Kenny, Mountain Iron and Virginia on the other end. Whether we plan it or not, or design it or not, we are going to end up with about 35 miles of new lakes in the Central Iron Range because we have three active mining companies that are going to make that happen. We have MinTac on one end, we have HibbingTac in the other, we have Keewatin Taconite on the other end of the range here. Within a couple of years, the land plug between Keewatin Taconite and HibbingTac Taconite will be gone. They'll become one. MinTac is going to be moving from their west pit to the east pit. We actually are going to end up Chisholm kind of as the center of this map here. We're going to end up with one lake that will stretch from east of Chisholm to Mountain Iron. And there's about a 2,000-foot land plug at that point that will actually connect us to the pit in Virginia. So theoretically, by moving that plug, we'll be able to take a boat from Chisholm to Virginia on this end. And then starting south of Chisholm here where Iron World sits at this end, we're going to have another lake that will extend beyond the bounds of this camp from south of Chisholm to Keewatin. And that's the opportunity that we have here. And Mr. Fido mentioned that through the Central Iron Range Initiative, we really just are a forum. We get together once a month, and our communities, mining companies, have participated in things. All the maps that you see here have been donated by firms such as Mine Architecture Resources, my paying job as an architect. John Jamnick back here is a civil engineer with RLK Casisto. We have committed our firms and are looking really for some help here. what happens right now on the Iron Range, and if you've driven through or have the opportunities to take a close look, we end up with pit walls that look exactly like this. And this came out of that charrette process, was drawn by a landscape architectural student at the University of Minnesota through a program that we hired some staff people to pull together. Kind of the vision here is that once we understand where the water level is going to be, and this is really the assistance that we're asking from you here, once we understand where the water levels are going to be, rather than ending up with pit shores or lake shores that look like this, they actually could be terraced. And if you're questioning whether or not the mining companies are really want to participate, U.S. Steel, the Mintac plant, they developed about a 2,500-foot terracing element over there just to kind of show what really could happen. Now, kind of the fallacy with this is we don't know where this water is going to end up today, and therefore we don't know where we need to terrace the property, at what elevation we need to do that. So part of what we're asking for is assistance here in helping us understand the water levels, and that would help us create something that would be absolutely developable long term rather than something that's very, very expensive to develop. Phil Scipione, I keep quoting him, he's the plant manager of Keewatin Taconite, and he said, I'm moving thousands of yards of dirt every day. If you tell me where you want me to put it, I'll put it there within reason. But once I put it someplace, don't ask me to move it. So that's really what we're trying to do here, is to try to design what our landscape is going to look like, you know, 25 to 30 years down the road. Now, we're, you know, that seems like a long way to go to get any fruit back for our investment here. Truth is, in working closely with mining companies and them disclosing where their activities are going to be and things like that, these three lakes east of Chisholm, here, directly east of Chisholm, are probably never going to be mined. The ore is so deep, so expensive for poor quality and things. So we're currently working with Iron Range Resources right now to help us start a prototype of residential development on these pits here. It's going to be very expensive to do that because the shores are the steep shear walls and things that we have to get in and regrade, and we still don't understand where this water level is going to end up. The other really exciting piece, I think, is that we not only will have opportunities to establish what the land is going to look like and to set it up for future development, we can do the same thing with the lakes. We're going to have 35 miles in lakes, not lakeshore. We'll have many hundreds of miles of lakeshore here. But the lake bottoms can be developed to support whatever kind of freshwater fish that we would want to have grow here. So we could develop bays that would support bass or bluegills, or we could have little rock islands out there that would support the growth of walleyes and things. We could have deep holes where we could actually fish lake trout and salmon and things like that. Right here in northern Minnesota, as I'm standing in the shower at 4 o'clock this morning getting ready to come and visit with you, I'm thinking we are asking for this as a, you know, central Iron Range project, but it really is much more far-reaching than that. It really is going to impact not only, you know, northern Minnesota, but the entire, you know, state in reality. People travel from all over the world, really, to fish in North Dakota at the lake that was created there at the Garrison Dam, or the one in South Dakota and things. So we have opportunities here. And we have the partners at the table. We have the people who will have our area under construction and are actually working on this every day. The piece that we would need to do here to develop this land design would be actually to take and the overburden off, calculate the dirt that's going to be removed, figure out what's taken out in taconite for ore production and things, what we put back in, and we'll design the hillside show that of the net capacity remaining there. That's kind of the exciting part and piece of that. This is another student's image of the Hibbing Chisholm area. Hibbing is on this map, 169, which currently comes through Chisholm in this fashion. We've kind of denied for the last 5 or 6 years that we're going to be mining across there. The project that has about $12 million in private development really is what we're calling the Motorplex would sit in this location. Motorplex is actually going to go here. And while we were fighting with the mining companies about where it should move and things like that, it actually, the negative became a positive. It brought us all to the table. We started to understand more where we're going to mine. You know, we want mining to continue in that. We actually just turned the Motorplex site 90 degrees. We're admitting now that we're going to mine across 169. If you leave Hibbing to Chisholm within a decade, when you're at this point in 169, you're actually going to see Hibbing taconite activity there. So this is the image that this student created here with the lakes. This Motorplex site was shown back in the beginning, so we are starting to achieve some of our goals here. And probably the most far-reaching, like I said, is to design the land, design the lakes to create this asset. That's really what we're asking for help here today.
And Mr. Chair and members, I'd be remiss not to mention the fact my co-authors in the audience, and we actually secured, let's have a Katrina, secured the first funding to do this Charette process all across the Iron Range to bring in the resources from the University of Minnesota to get this done. So I want to publicly thank him while he's sitting in the back. And with that, we're open for any questions.
Representative Sertich, I see there are many pits there, and could this be the start of the biggest money pit Northern Minnesota ever saw? I'd love to have it. Please sell me some land there. But at the same time, where is the end of the cost? I know the state should have and hopefully we'll have some participation in it. But it could go on forever.
Mr. Chair and members, I do not think so. As soon as we get this pre-design envisioning done, I foresee the private side developing these plots and taking over. As anyone knows who has bought Lakeshore in Minnesota or has owned it in the past, the valuation has gone up. Individuals are coming from all over. And Mr. Chair and members on the other side of the aisle, it's generally more conservative people that are buying this land, so maybe if you want to populate the range with a few more Republicans, there might be some great land over there. We'll get you maybe up to 40% or so, and then we'll cut it off. But Mr. Chair, if you want to work into the language somehow and you get a plot there, right in Chisholm, I'd be happy to get some property next to you, and I think we'd be great neighbors.
I look forward to that. Mr. Hillbrand,
Mr. Chair, long term, I don't envision us requiring a lot of money from the state to have this happen. And the people who are going to invest money in the area are also taking things out of there. It's the mining companies. If we can actually design the area for them, there's discussions within reason that they would use our design in their permitting process. And so that would be the construction vehicle. The key here is going to be understanding that water elevation, our pits continue to fill and things like that. We probably are going to be looking at some natural outfalls at both the east end and west ends of the edge of the pits to drain them. And the other piece that I didn't touch on was this wind energy pump storage. On the left side of this map here, this large lake and a retention basin that Hibbing Taconite has could actually become a wind energy pump storage electric generation facility there that they're thinking could be 1,500 to 2,000 kilowatts in a very green concept there. So the idea isn't to have to invest a lot of money out of public dollars. Hopefully the private industry would take over here.
And Mr. Chair, if you look at the yellow line there, which is the line for the sanitary sewer, we're already taking care of the infrastructure needs on this lake chain that's going to happen. There's going to be no need for individual septic systems. They can just tie right into this line that's coming straight across the Iron Range.
From that perspective, having the mining companies help you plan this makes very good sense. Any other questions? Representative Slaw?
Mr. Chair and Representative Sturtage, this is my first exposure to this program. It's very visionary and very ambitious. And I grew up in the West. I think we all know that. And back during the Work Projects Administration, they did this. There's these big lakes in the desert, if you've all been there, and people will say, how did the lake get in the desert? Well, they're man-made, mm-hmm. is how they got there. And but it's so hot, there's not a lot of development around them, is kind of what happened there. In the West, the Colorado River feeds these dams and has a natural source for perpetual filling and flow of the river and water supply. I assume these lakes are just going to naturally fill up, and I guess from snow, and how that all is going to work. And maybe the state should purchase some of the land. That's not a bad idea. What are those leased land? We always had that big debate over that.
He doesn't care for that.
No.
The majority of land, Mr. Chair, that's in Flowick in northern Minnesota is actually already owned by the state and the feds and the county. So they're actually looking to get some dollars on the tax rolls here and some land. There's a natural aquifer underneath here, one of the largest, and that's how the lakes will be self-sustaining. But also that's part of the funding that's needed is to figure out how those levels happen. But there's a great water source underneath here naturally that's going to keep this. We won't have to worry about snow or or some impaired water issues that will be naturally self-sustaining.
Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up. That's an awful lot of water, and then obviously to sustain it, and then if you're going to have a fishier fishing industry and all that, so as that progresses, I guess I'd be interested in learning more about that, because this is a huge, I don't know what the volume is, but it's big.
Mm-hmm. Representative Zelka's got a question. You know, he's the other resort area.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sertich, I think I'm a small developer, and from a developer standpoint, this is really exciting. I see pitfalls as a representative, but what I wonder, who's going to own the shoreland? That's my first question, I guess, and I have one more after that.
Currently, the land is under multiple different pieces of ownership, and we are not looking to gain public ownership of the property at this point at all. We're working with Congressman Oberstar to see if we can't get some Department of Interior's money to help a little bit with the planning portion. The St. Louis County does have some requirements relative to their keeping these pits safe after the mining, and so there is an easement that they have and potentially could use that. But basically, we're hoping that private industry takes over. We've been working with Iron Range Resources to begin what we're calling our prototype to show how things could happen. And what we want to do is get something small scale under construction, actually, to kind of figure out how we really ought to lay things out in that. But I think once the plan is developed, once the land forms are designed, both the land and lake structure, I think we can pretty much stand back and wait for the mining companies to take over. What's really interesting on the range is that these pits naturally fill with water. I mean, they come up feet per year. I mean, it's not just inches, and the water is just crystal clear. We all drink water out of here. Hibbing, Chisholm, there, we don't have wells. You know, heard presentations and discussions on that. We take our water out of these pits with very little treatment and things, and we all drink that, so we definitely need to preserve that and things. And when these mining companies mine, they actually have to dewater. They move millions of gallons of water out of these holes and continue to have to pump them every minute of every day in order to keep them dry enough to mine. One of the mining engineers, we were talking one afternoon at a SERI meeting about the Three Lakes east of Chisholm, and we're talking about where the potential water levels might end up, and we know it's going to be above where they're at today, and then we talked about artificially controlling them and waiting for them to fill to develop them and things like that. And Jerry Dombeck is a plant engineer from both MinTac and Kiewit and Taconite, and he said, well, you know, if we know where the water level wants to be in these pits, he said, we're going to have to dewater the pits behind Buell when we start mining there real short, like, we'll just fill those for you. So the sense of cooperation is there, and I think what we're really trying to underdo is understand the asset that we have and to be able to plan our future there, which I think will be just, we were talking a little bit on the way down. I don't know what the tax impact of the homes and cabins on Lake Vermilion are, but this would be another something very similar to that. It's lots and lots of dollars, just not for the northern Minnesota, but for the entire state.
Mr. Chair, well, I've been longer than Lake Vermilion, wouldn't it? I think Lake Vermilion's like 22 miles, and this would get bigger. But I guess the part that excites me and that I would like to see is a way to let developers get in there. And when that happens, typically they're willing to pay a lot of the expenses just because of the reward that they'll get. And we have an iron range, the Cayuna Iron Range in Crosby, that was mined years and years ago, and everybody thought it looked so ugly, but suddenly it's become a place that they want to protect and are calling the next boundary waters. But, mm-hmm. So it has great potential.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, that is our goal, is to let private industry take over. We just kind of like to lead the charge here a little bit, and if we can show people what can happen, we're hoping that's exactly what happens. Thank you.
Very exciting proposal. We got two other bills. Any other questions? Representative Westenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sertich and your team of testifiers here, I'm just trying to figure this out here. Please help me understand how this works, because, you know, in thinking that bonding is mostly, you know, bricks and mortar, this is pre-designed, you know, for this project. And I understand that you have to have pre-designed too. However, part of this seems like it should be, you know, with money. And if I remember correctly, I think in the Senate bill it is proposed, and it's in the Senate bill under sewage or sewer, you know, containment. How does that break down? I mean, was there a separation in the Senate bill, or is it all included in the Senate bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the fact that it's listed as a line item under sewage in the Senate bill is that it also is inclusive of these other elements as well. Now, this particular appropriation request on the House side, again, includes the same number of things in the same category. It's just how they stack up, whether the sewer system is on top or as part of the whole package. In fact, the Sanitary Sewer District Engineering Management Implementation is listed as $300,000. The Land Design Implementation is listed as $200,000. Right. The Hydrology Verification and Mine Pit...
Well, got that.
Okay, you've got that. All right. So, again, each of these items is similarly structured on the Senate side.
Mr. Chair, was this ranked in the WIPS WIP program? Did it have a ranking?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, thank you.
We are, however, on the list of the MPCA as a project, itemized project.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? We'll move this. Representative Sturdich removes his motion to have House File 359 be rolled over for possible inclusion in our bonding priorities.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Sturdich.
Mr. Chair, I'll be very brief on this one. As Mayor Alexander, my testifier, couldn't make it, so I'll try to tap dance and have some folks behind me to help out as well. I'd like to move House File 427 for possible inclusion in the House bonding recommendation, jobs bonding recommendation.
Very well.
Mr. Chair, members, once again, this bill was before us last session, included in the recommendations that move forward and is in the Senate version as well. This deals with big money for business development and public infrastructure grants. There are many communities that have benefited from this, and as we talked about in my local project, now looking at a statewide level, those needs are not just happening on the Central Iron Range, but they're all over. This infrastructure initiative has been a great investment in communities such as Brainerd recently, Wyoming, Alexandria, have all received grant monies and financing from DEED to upkeep their infrastructure. The issue with it is they've either ran out of money and or had some issues with some of the applications. So the need is still there. We just ran out of funds. Some of the communities that were coming up short, we really need to help their local infrastructure happen in Fergus Falls, Brainerd again, Buell and Cohasset, and this town of Faribault. And probably Fairmont's going to probably have an application in here if the chair has anything to do with it as well.
St. James already has, thank you.
There we go. So the need is there. I've got testifiers here to make a brief announcement, and we'll take it from there.
Would you give your name for the record, please?
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Carrie Thurlow. I'm an attorney at Floridian Hood, and I represent the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For members of the committee who are not familiar with the Coalition, it is a group of 72 cities located outside the 7-county metro area. We are extremely supportive of House File 427. Proposes to provide $14 million in state bonding for the Greater Minnesota Development Infrastructure Grants and $10 million for the Greater Minnesota Redevelopment Grants. I recognize earlier on your agenda, Mr. Chair, you have a different approach to the redevelopment grant project in House File 595. The coalition would also be supportive of that. Because the committee has already dealt with the redevelopment issue, while the coalition is extremely supportive of that and would again reaffirm that Greater Minnesota has needs in redevelopment, I'll spend the greater portion of my time talking about the Infrastructure Development Grant Program, which is the other part of House File 427. The committee should have received a packet that looks like this. My comments are largely going to reflect the information in that packet. Greater Minnesota's economy lags behind the metro area. In fact, one study conducted found that 38 states have a better balance between rural and urban economies. To address that problem, the legislature in 2002 created the Greater Minnesota Business Development Infrastructure Grant Program. The bonding money for that program, however, was vetoed by Governor Ventura. In 2003, however, the legislature did provide $7.5 million of bonding dollars to that program. The money was all used in 1 year, and according to reports from the Department of Economic Employment and Economic Development, the program was extremely successful. Page 2 of your packet highlights some of the projects that money went to fund. It included $500,000 for a 66-acre industrial park expansion in Moorhead. It included $300,000 for utility and street improvements for an industrial park expansion in Alexandria. $100,000 for street connections to approximately 200 acres in the industrial park in Faribault, and $209,500 for an industrial park utility improvements in St. James. This is a 50% matching grant program that allows cities to accommodate new economic development in greater Minnesota by allowing cities to extend the infrastructure needed to support the businesses. It is capped at $1 million per city, and the money is used specifically for upgrading and expanding industrial parks. We are asking for $14 million. Perhaps the needs could even be greater than that, but we recognize that this would go a long way to helping our cities, our state, reduce the disparities between metro and rural economies and also bring new economic development out to greater Minnesota. With that, I guess I'll stay open for any questions that the committee may have.
Are there any questions? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, is there a way that I could get a date that these some of these particular grants were issued? I don't need a date today, but I mean in the a little later on, particularly the North Branch and the Wyoming grants that were put out there. I'd like to find out when they were done. They seem to be another state subsidy for Jobs Inc. I don't know, maybe, but you could certainly give me that date if you would, please,
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I'll make sure that Deed, actually, who gave out the grants, can get you that information. I believe John Murkowski is still in the audience. Yeah. Right there. He'll get you the dates.
He was rolling his eyes earlier.
Any further questions? I have one quick one. Just for purposes of greater Minnesota definition, is this outside the seven-county metro area?
Mr. Chair, yes, it is.
Okay. Hearing no other questions, Representative Sertich renews his motion for House File 427 for consideration in our funding requests. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Our final bill of the day is with Representative Brukovina.
Chair and members, thank you. I have with me Al Haduk, who's the former mayor of Aurora and volunteering his time today. The beer has come a long way, so I'll just quickly say I don't have a very glamorous bill. What we have in Aurora is a situation where a methane explosion last May 5th blew up their sewage plant. And so Mayor Haduk can take over from here, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Your name. Okay. Representative Sertich moves House File 42 for consideration in our omnibus bonding bill. I'll get it down one of the times. Representative.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Al Hodnick. As Representative Rukovina said, former mayor of Aurora, I'm here today on behalf of Mayor Warshak, who was not able to be here because of work schedules and all the rest. I served as mayor for 5 terms or 10 years, so I'm very familiar with the situation in Aurora. I stay very close to it. It's been interesting to watch you all work today, and I'd be remiss in not commenting that residents up north at least are very interested now that you've attended win-win bargaining and conflict resolution sessions, and it's sort of a kinder, gentler nation down here that they asked me to keep an eye on Representative Rukovina as well, and I understand he didn't attend, or he told me he didn't attend. And I want you to know that I've been coaching Representative Rukovina to play better in the sandbox down here.
Mr. Chair, who moved this?
I'm hoping in the end that if Representative Rukavina is more effective, that you'll recognize my coaching. If not, I hope you don't hold it against me today.
He's our friend, Mr. Chair.
As Representative Rukavina said, there was a methane gas explosion on May 5th of 2004 that wiped out the Aurora wastewater treatment plant. And while I'm here today to talk about things less lofty than connecting Pitts and Chisholm and all the rest, there's nothing more basic than the sewer services in the city. Initially, what we were able to do is to restore basic power to the facility and sort of clean up the site and make sure that nothing else would happen to it. Unfortunately, no one was hurt or killed at the time. But the reality is the city's been limping on temporary arrangements ever since, including today, up to today. We did get temporary approval from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and also from the city of White Lakes, our neighbors, to begin to haul our sludge and solids over to the city of White Lakes. Yeah, that arrangement's been very costly for the city of Aurora, and it's also pushing the White Lakes plant beyond effective capacity, but we've been able to make it work at least through this period of time. With respect to insurance, the city did have coverage relative to this explosion. However, the policy was full of riders, limits, caps, and other kinds of things to mitigate insurance company risk. And so in the last analysis, the final settlement payment to the city of Aurora was something on the order of $730,000. That final payment allowed for cleanup and demolition of the damaged areas. It's allowed us to erect a temporary control building, establish a new power feed in the operation, a control package, and get some temporary pumps to receive the incoming effluent and also to pump these solids to the city of White Lakes in a truck, if you will. In terms of financial management or ability to pay, I would just say this to you, that the city of Aurora and White Lakes have presided over recently the closure of LTD Steel Mining Company, 2,000 jobs lost, high-paying jobs, and also the tragic fire at Partridge River Industries where we lost an additional 90 jobs. We're talking about a community here of 1,800 people. That's a relatively large hit, and we've been reeling ever since. There's been collateral damage to the school, the Sabi schools, and obviously a lot of young families have had to leave. The commercial district is still suffering, and frankly, our low to moderate income index is 65.1%, so the ability to raise taxes or to hit people is very, very difficult at this stage of the game. Additionally, of course, we've had to share, like everybody has, in the state's pain with respect to LGA cuts, and in our case, that's further complicated or twisted with taconite formulas, and so that erosion of revenue continues for the city. We are nonetheless raised taxes and raised rates, and I'll speak to that here as I go forward. The consulting engineers that we're working with on this project have indicated that $1.5 million is needed to put this plant back into normal operation. That is to get us off the temporary transfer and temporary hauling of solids, if you will, to the city of White Lakes. The city is also staring at an additional $3.7 million, which will be required because our discharge goes to the St. Louis River, which is part of the Great Lakes Initiative, which is part of the Lake Superior Basin. Mercury thresholds, other sorts of particulates in the water have to be met. That bogey is challenging enough for the city of Aurora, $3.7 million. We have some general obligation debt already with respect to street and infrastructure that we did earlier that we're digesting. We've raised residential and commercial rates 20% last fall, and we're staring at another 20% increase this summer. And the local levy was boosted an additional 10% going into 2005 by this current administration to offset further revenue erosion. So we have attempted, or the city has attempted, to boost its levy and also boost its rates to try to accommodate this, but that's for normal and continuing operations. It hardly puts a dent in at all any of the capital work that we need to do. We've been working with Congressman Oberstar and other federal agencies to obtain grants and loans. Same with the MPCA. We've been moved up their pecking order, if you will, to get on a list to get some funding. At the end of the day, there's less grants and more debt, as you know, however low interest it is. What we need immediately now is help from you, the state legislature, through the bonding bill to get our primary digester, sludge pumps, and piping systems functioning properly, get us back to a basic level of operation, and we'll take it from there in terms of GLI and everything else. The repair items will get us away from very costly and nerve-wracking temporary arrangements. I can't tell you how difficult it's been for the plant to avoid bypasses during storms, spring runoff, and all the rest when you have a crippled plant recognizing again we discharge to the St. Louis, which ultimately ends up in Lake Superior. Our temporary PCA and Hoyt Lakes authorization to ship solids will end by December of this year, so we need to take some action this summer one way or the other. And lastly, any help you can provide in the form of bonding assistance will give us a time to be thoughtful about securing the remaining money that we need to put the plant in full compliance with new regulations. The Senate, of course, has moved along the same bill at $1.5 million, and we would certainly ask, and I would appreciate today on behalf of the city, that you would consider doing the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Westerberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I need some help in clarifying information on this. I haven't served on this committee here in quite a number of years, but the WIP money is also included in the bonding bill for our committee, correct? But is it just two separate categories? And should this bill, I certainly, you know, see the need for this bill. I think it's a really good bill, too, by the way. But I'm just trying to figure out, how do we categorize these things? And
Mr. Chair, Representative Westberg, in the Senate bill, I believe that this language is sitting in the WIP portion of a bill as a priority. But, so that's the way they did it over there. And I had asked revisers to do the same, and I don't know if this line was specifically addressed as WIP. Maybe Mr.
Chairman Guther?
Representative Roquevin, I'm certain that because of the nature of the explosion and stuff, that would be very, very strongly considered in our recommendations to the
Mr. Chairman, and I thank you very much, and it has been an extreme emergency situation. Thank God the two operators had walked out of the building about 10 minutes before the explosion occurred, and it's crippled the community, and it is taxing the Hoyt Lakes plant to the maximum. It's got to be addressed soon, so appreciate your help.
Any further questions? Hearing none, Representative Sturgis renews his motion for House File 492 for consideration in our omnibus bonding bill.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move the minutes of January 31st with the correction of Monday instead of Thursday on the minutes.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slawick.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question for those of us that have never done bonding before, been on a committee that's heard bonding bills. I assume staff is going to prepare a sheet with all the requests, and then are they going to put what happened last year? Are we going to have any comparison, or is that us?
Certainly, I would recommend that we will make sure that you have a list of what the bonding bill was last year, so you can compare those projects that were in there last year with this year's hearings. I think it was only fair to hear as many as wanted to be heard, because it gives us more of a sense of urgency and to the existing numbers, which are a lot of new ones. And I think we will rank them. Representative Mahoney and I have to discuss the process in which we're going to do that. We're going to rank them high, medium, low, and then pass those recommendations on to the Capital Investment Committee, is what a lot of committees do. And the ranking of both caucuses will be melded together by staff, and that ranking will be listed for our committee's purposes, so we see it, and then we'll send that on to Capital Investment. I don't know of a fairer way. If anybody does know one, I'd certainly be open to that. Yes.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask a question then? It seems like there's all these wastewater things and there's sewer things. Do we rank overall? Are we ranking with them? Do we sort of take those separately, or do we have to meld those into things like the planetarium? I mean,
The wastewater programs have generally been listed according to priority from the MPCA. However, this last Aurora Hoyt Lakes proposal with the extenuating circumstances, I think would cause us to have our committee to say that we want to recommend this one to make sure it's put on the list, because, you know, it's explosions not happening every time. You know, it's,
We certainly want to honor the MPCA's list. They are the experts as far as that's concerned. So we generally have done that.
Representative Westerberg.
Oh, Mr. Chair, and that was my question, too, is in the bonding bill, then will we have a separate category for WIF money?
Yes, we will.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I hope you will include me in that discussion with Representative Mahoney as the CFL finance lead. I'd like to be part of that. And besides, it might take two of us to, you know.
Absolutely.
With you, you have the gap.
You can certainly, anybody would like to do.
Yeah.
If you'd like me to come to both caucuses, I would do it any way you want to do it. I want to absolutely be inclusionary in both caucuses. I want this to be as fair as we can make it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slaughter.
And I did ask this to Representative Mahoney, but there's no targets at all?
As of this time, there is no targets.
So we rank based on...
We make high, low, medium, and we pass that on.
Okay.
If the chairman of the bonding committee, and I will ask him again today if we have a target. If he has no targets, then we will just do the high, low, medium.
Mr. Chair, we've always passed out the most important issues to the state out of this committee, and I suspect that we'll do that again.
I will look forward to having that discussion. With that, this meeting is adjourned.